So if you will please start with your reasons for running for school board.
Sure. Well, like a lot of folks in the Valley, I'm super excited about and really vested in the performance of our children. Margaret and I, my wife, we're raising three lovely girls in the Valley and obviously in the public school district there. So I guess just like a lot of other families, we want to serve and we want to help make things stronger, better, you know. So that's kind of that overarching theme. Specifically, though, I'd like to think that I can add some additional strength and capabilities to a performing board, you know, to a school district board. My view of the board is one that really is, it serves as a bit of a conduit and a bit of a kind of an active servant for the broader vision and goals of the community. And I like to be in that space. I have actually a pretty long career of service to my community, serving in the military for 11 years as an academy graduate and then a combat veteran of the first Gulf War, and then serving at the state level with some appointed positions with our current governor, also serving here locally in our community as a city councilman, as a RAFTA board member, as a 17-year member of the Aspen Service, you know, Aspen Rotary Club. I've done service and you know, recognizing that there's a greater good beyond the individual self is where I start. And so I think that I still have a lot of that in my gas tank, so to speak, and I want to bring that and continue to bring that to our school district. And I think most importantly, I really get jazzed about high-performing organizations, and I really like to work with others and to build something beyond the capabilities of just our own individual selves. And I believe that that's what we have going on right now with our school district. And I look at with a great deal of pride across the entire balance of our youth and the, you know, the strength and the performance and their willingness and their abilities. It's inspiring, and it motivates one to kind of step in and lean into it, as I say to my daughters, to lean into it to make things better. So with all that being said, I do see the district board as that leadership body, that conduit, as I said. And I think right now our number one role and our number one mission is to create this culture and climate that is positive and it's safe, not only for our kids, but for our faculty and for our staff. I think our community resonates with that. I think that that's part of their views and their vision, to have a school district that is broad and it's open and it's honest and it's transparent and it's innovative and it's creative. And it really does hone in on the betterment of our children, but it also recognizes how we achieve our excellence with the delivery of our education and our development of our youth. And the kind of the tip of the spear in that world, in my view, and many others, frankly, is that the teacher matters most. You know, teachers matter most. I've heard that from many education leaders, in my short time in my tenure, and I believe that. I really do believe that honoring, recognizing, and having a broad base of support for our teaching staff and our teaching cadre is really the most powerful place that we can work from as a school district board, and probably more importantly, as a community. So the district board has this duty and this obligation to listen and to understand those community goals and those visions around creating that excellence. And we have the responsibility of crafting strategies and crafting policy procedures that are then executed by our leadership staff as well as our teaching faculty. So how we translate that now down into our priorities, now I'm speaking as a current board member, the broader board has now committed to, I think, three very important objectives. Number one, we're committed to, obviously, we have a duty and an obligation in our fiduciary to make sure of financial stability for the district. I mean, that is absolutely paramount. And we can have our wonderful programs, and we can have our excellence in our, we have so many things that we do in the world of outdoor education and experiential education and special education, and then our robust academic platforms and our and tremendous athletic regimes that we deploy on. We can't do all that unless we have some level of financial stability and security for the long haul. So that is really a job for us.
Can I pause you there and ask how the finances are at the school district right now?
Indeed. The finances at the school district are healthy and sound. We have good reserves, but just like every entity, if you will, public organization in the state and frankly across the country, public funds for public objectives are always in challenge. You always feel like you have that next kind of dark cloud out there on the horizon. So we always need to make sure, clearly, since we all publicly fund our district, we have to stay close, responsive, open and transparent with the community that we serve. And by doing that and staying close and connected, I think we are able to build the trust and the confidence and the support from our community. But that's a precious relationship that can never be taken for granted. And so that's, I think, again, that's in our fiduciary duty and our responsibility, and to never take the community for granted, and to clearly do a good job of protecting the public resources, number one. Number two, I talked about the teachers, that's teachers matter most. It really now is being translated in this current board's stated objectives. We are fully recognizing that we want to attract and retain just a super talented, creative and innovative, teacher cadre. We want them to stay here as long as they can with us and grow and develop and mature with the kids in the overall program. And by doing that, in order to do that, we have to think about compensation models, and we have to think about housing and housing policies. And so we are making a very, very conscious effort. In fact, we are revamping, together with senior leadership, we're revamping the salary schedules for the entire teacher cadre, with the goal, clearly, of trying to make it more competitive, more accessible, and more in line with the development and their advancement within their trajectory of their career. Said another way, there should be some direct nexus to achieving a master's degree and the compensation and how that translates into the delivery systems that teachers are able to conduct within their own classrooms, and to have real explicit connections there so that a teacher understands achieving X, Y, and Z in advanced and professional development classes will translate into additional compensation and better performance in the classroom. Way to go. So we're revamping the schedules with the senior leadership, as well as the teachers' union and the teachers' association are in partnership in that work effort, which, by the way, again, it goes back to that role of being able to partner. And then the other thing, the housing programs. We recognize full well that one of the most daunting and, frankly, challenging aspects of this wonderful valley of ours is to find your home, is to be able to kind of grow your roots and to go deep. And so we recognize that we have a limited inventory of housing that the district owns. It's 43 residences, and that's actually material. We'd like to grow that, and we have some assets from which we are able to consider some additional properties, and you probably saw in the paper recently, we just put under contract a three-bedroom townhouse up. It's a half duplex up in Snowmass Village, and we're doing that in order to have housing for families, some senior teaching faculty or some senior leadership staff and the families that come in. But we also need the one-bedroom and the two-bedroom product in order to attract and retain those, the new college recruit, or the teacher with just a few years of experience and wants to come recognizing the wonderful, valley that we live and educate our kids from. So with all that being said, so again, we know that we have to, and we're focusing on improving our voice and our connection with our community, and to be more responsive and to be that servant leader you know, that real acknowledged role that it, there is a greater good. And then number two, working on our teachers and our teacher compensation models. And three, working on our housing inventory to grow and expand to further attract and retain.
That teacher retention issue has come up for a number of years. And I'm wondering what, you know, you haven't served on the school board maybe during some of the height of losing that staff, but I'm wondering what role the school board has in investigating that a little further. Why are we losing good teachers?
Indeed. In fact, that work has, it continues to occur. You're right. It's not just one chapter of a 30-chapter book because it permeates and it moves, and it's kind of, unfortunately, it's a tough trend at the moment. And so there are several drivers, but I think the number one driver that everyone does recognize, it's kind of a combined effect of the compensation models coupled with the housing. But I would also say this, and I'd put this on the table, and this is something that this current board is also discussing. And again, it gets back to that culture and climate. And making, you know, trying to provide for a safe and honest and trusting and respecting climate and condition from which the organization operates and does its work is a, you know, it's easy to say, and it's at the same time it's difficult to, you know, to kind of work on. It's that soft, gooey space. You know, it's not something that we could objectively say, if we do A plus B, it will be equal to C, and boom, our job will be completed. Creating a culture and a climate that is positive and supportive, it really does start with leadership. Mm-hmm. And so this board has stated, as one of its objectives, that we have the responsibility and the duty as a unified leadership team to really strengthen and improve the culture and the climate. Now, how do you do that? Well, we first and foremost, we need to be role modeling what a safe and respectful setting looks like, even in our school board meetings, in our discussions with staff, in our discussions with the community, in our outreach programs, and our willingness to take open and constructive criticisms. Those are the actions and the steps as a leadership team we can perform that began to state that this is not about trying to hurt individuals and trying to catch people doing something wrong. This is about trying to do something and be supportive and allow the safety and the space and the confidence so that if somebody is willing to try something and fail and not lose of their position or their rank or their structure or, frankly, their job. So those are the types of messages that I think that start with the school board. I mean, where else can they start? I mean, clearly, they frankly start from the community. And again, it goes back to that willingness to be a servant leader for the broader community. It starts there. And so I think there's a certain expectation. Yeah, I think there's a certain expectation from the community that these actions and the climate and that positive culture not only be tended to, but it be grown and strengthened and institutionalized. It becomes known, our school district becomes known for that open and transparent and that supportive. We will never get to a space of innovation and creativity and dynamic teaching unless there's a safety space and there's this wonderful structure where people know that it's actually celebrated to stretch and to sometimes make a mistake and to treat it as a learning moment. I think, frankly, we owe that to our kids as well, to role model what that looks like. Because at the end of the day, we're trying to create citizens. We're trying to create young adults that are just dynamic, and they are, you know, great critical thinkers, and they're innovative, but they're also productive. They're willing and they know that their duty and their calling is to help society and to help to kind of solve problems on this good earth. And frankly, at the end of the day, that's really where our mark will be measured, how well our youth perform in the greater world.
Wonderful. And I want to get to academics in just a moment, but to come back to the safe space, it sounds like you have seen that there is room for improvement there.
There is.
Maybe there's not that openness between the administration and faculty or something like that right now.
That's true. And, you know, it's an open and constructive dialogue as well. And in fact, I think it's also fair to say that it's a work in progress. And there has been, I think there's data that would suggest that there's been improvements.
Okay.
But it's just, again, it's I think it's our collective attitude and our collective kind of drive to go for excellence and to move from, it's pretty good, to super great. We've got to move to the super great. And so, yeah, there's been active discussions both with the senior leadership and within senior leadership, and there's been active discussions with the Teachers Association and within the teachers' cadre. The one thing that I hear on the street that is the kind of the indicator, though, that tells me that it's not quite where it should be, is when you hear some critique from one of our precious teacher cadre, when I hear that they say, look, I just don't know if the district has my back. That's for me, I translate that to, right, I translate that to, I don't know, clearly there's not a comfort level, there's not a safety space, there's not that confidence to go out there and to make those mistakes. So I will say, too, the leadership within the district, it's not just the superintendent, it's not just the school board, but the leadership that we have developed in the teachers' cadre and then also the principals and the assistant principals, I dare say that this is a dynamic team that we have, and it's kind of humbling to work with many of them. And it's a neat, I think, and this positive kind of support is contagious. So in my humble view, I do see a trajectory towards that excellence and that super great. But it's at a certain, again, as I said before, I don't think you ever really get there, and you can't check that box and be done. I think you actually carry, in my humble view, in order to be great, you got to continue to kind of strive for that extra continuous improvement methodology and philosophy. And again, I think that's also a great thing to role model for our children.
Absolutely. So Aspen High School, at least, has the reputation for being one of the best in the state as academics go. There's been some data, and I know that the tests are changing and things are changing, but there's been some data to show if we're not slipping, we're at least not growing at the rate other places are growing. What's going on with academics at the school district?
Fair comments. And, there has been some data, and you could also say there's been data that suggests that we've had some recent good news stories. There's been some IB improvements, both in terms of participation in the international baccalaureate programs that we have at the high school, and not only in terms of numbers and the depth, but their actual performance within those metrics and the success rate. We had 100% success rate. That's a great little piece of data that I'd love to get out there in the community. More broadly, there is absolutely this push and pull of developing in a public school setting. Again, we're not a private institution. We're not a prep academy. I like to say it this way. We are the big tent. We are the big tent model. If you live in the district, by definition, you are invited to the tent. And even in some years we've had in the past where even if you don't live in the district, we've had the opportunity for space available. That's gotten a little tighter because we've had there's a data point out there as well. There's been a migration of inflow, net increase of population in the district because of what you described earlier. We continue to carry a level of rigor and academic excellence, and we are known for that. And yes, you're right. You're only as good as kind of last year's set of scores. And there's a great many the way that we actively measure and monitor is our results-oriented, coherent governance model. So in the world of academics, we're measuring results, and we measure everything from the formative and the interim stuff and the summative stuff. So we're looking at the beginning of the year. We're looking at the body of work through the course of the year and the qualitative inputs from the teachers, and we're measuring down at a level of data that I think, 10, 15 years ago would have been described as unattainable. And then we're obviously measuring the summative stuff. And there's summative tests, the kind of the culmination test of the classic ACT and SAT. And then there's the STARS and the other assessments that the state requires and we participate in. And so, yes, there are some. Here's a great data point, an example. Last year's our monitoring and our overall analysis and ultimate review of our performance in the math, and that was in the math from K through 12. So it was a total vertical review of all of the grades and all of the assessments, again, the formative, interim, and summative. So there's a great big, a very large body of data that has to be sifted and interpreted. And at the end of the day, we felt as a board, and frankly, some of the leadership of the faculty, as well as the senior leadership, recognized and understood and accepted the fact that we were not progressing. So the school board decided to not accept the recommendation for reasonable progress being achieved. That's the term of art that's used in this space. And so today, we basically said, look, we got to take a deep dive. We actually have to take a kind of a complete comprehensive review of that entire vertical curriculum and to explore and understand and try to redesign that which we are doing in our math, that what we're delivering in our math and our math programs, again, all the way from K. And a couple of observations. One, the points of transfer from elementary to middle and middle to high, obviously those transfer spots are difficult spots that you need to really be paying a lot of attention to so that the kids don't fall off track or get lost, or frankly, the curriculum is not perfectly aligned. And then within the schools themselves, some of the curriculum is interpreted, you know, differently. And that's actually good for innovation and creativity. All children don't learn the same way. And so the fact that we have different, you know, delivery systems is, I think, an attribute, and it gives more variety to what we're able to do. But nonetheless, having some level of alignment and having some ability so that we're, if you will, to borrow a phrase, we're speaking a more common language, and we're sourcing our curriculum at the elementary, in the middle, and at the high school now from one body of evidence, one body of work, I should say, and so that helps us to ensure that there's not the kind of the disconnect and the gaps, and then just spending more time in work session format with teachers, and in this particular example, the math committee was made up of a group of, you know, math leaders from the various schools to help break down and understand what were those key things that were denying or, if you will, kind of impeding exemplary performance at those various levels. And so this is not a mandate from the board or some. Here's another good point. You never want a school board to pretend as if they are education experts. You want them to be, as I said earlier, servant leaders and to be experts in understanding and communicating what the community wants and being able to develop strategies and philosophies and policies that help support and provide a framework. But then you have to have the operational latitude and the operating freedom for the teaching cadre to do their stuff, to do their stuff. And the senior leadership provide them and the faculty leadership to provide safety and to provide a little bit of guidance and direction, but to let the teachers do their stuff and to know that they have that safety and that support. I think all of that kind of ties into ultimately achieving better performance and knowing that we're performing better in our academic realm.
Back towards, I guess, more of the election side of things.
Sure.
Are you up against anything? Like, you have more people running than
the three seats. That's right. We have three incumbents, but we have five. And you know, the two candidates that are not current incumbents, they're deeply vested as well into the community, and it's important. They serve on the District Accountability Committee, which is also another good, if you will, device or tool to help interpret and to represent the broader community. And it also becomes an avenue of service where members of the community, you know, it's made up of parents, it's made up of teachers, it's made up of other community members, it's made up of a slice of the faculty and the administration, I should say. And it also has a school board member on that committee. So that's another avenue of service that gives us a better connection, and it frankly provides a nice, if you will, checks and balances, and it brings in, I think, additional perspective. an additional perspective, view, opinion, desire, all combine to strengthen the overall performance of our organization. And I think that's the attitude of this board, and I think that's the attitude of our senior leadership. And it's also we're trying to gain trust and gain confidence so that, you know, more broadly, the community feels it as well.
So right now, would you say that the current school board members are all aligned kind of along your lines as well as the...
The good news is that it's a cross-section, and I think that's important as well. You don't want five members of any particular... It's like on city council. Yeah. Clearly, we had differing views, which made for a better overall process, constructive debate, and in my view, always yielded a more quality decision.
Right.
Sometimes goof it up, but that's human. But we want our district board to be, at least in my humble view, a good broad representation. So we do. We have, for my example, I'm married to Margaret. She's a 25-year experienced elementary school teacher. So that's an additional perspective brought into the board and into the review, and I think that's important. We have other parents. Frankly, we have a lot of parents on the board, and I think that's self-evident and also important. But I don't want, and I don't think any of the other board members would disagree with this. We don't want us to be kind of, you know, unanimous. We need to create that power, and the power comes from the differing views. But, you know, it's a consensus building model, and it's based on meritocracy. In order to build consensus, you have to put on the table a quality perspective and then support it with quality evidence.
Great. Is there anything else you want to add about your current role on the school board or your ideas for the future?
Well, I would like to add the fact that in addition to serving on the school board, I volunteer on the high school chain gang, and the chain gang did wager that I would not be able to include the chain gang's reference, so I did include them. The chain gang operates when we own our home games. I'm also I love this too. So for the baseball, I'm an assistant coach for the high school baseball team.
Great.
Again, it falls under that broad perspective of service to our community, and really just deriving a great deal of satisfaction from that.
Dwayne, thank you so much for coming in today.
Cool beans. Yeah, thanks for having me.